So yesterday I got pretty deep in the weeds on the NFL. Rightfully so. Monday after championship weekend. Another Bills heartbreak. Literal historic Saquon runs. I was pumped on football. It's the last real weekend of football, right? The Super Bowl's not real football. It's just not. Yes, it technically matters the most, but one game, all of a sudden your bets are like, what color is the Gatorade versus trying to have actually predict. Oh, my least favorite thing is every year when just the one person gets the like, oh, this anthem singer did this anthem and they did this thing. Or someone's friend worked at the arena and they said that they saw the practice run be this long. You're like, ugh. When the Chiefs won their last two of their three Super Bowls, the Gatorade color, I enjoy the fun, okay? I enjoy the fun. It's nice to bring everybody in on a true passion of mine, which is watching the NFL. I love people having their opinions on it. This year's halftime show is actually interesting for reasons that Mike Jose doesn't want to talk about. That's devastating to him. But ultimately, that's the last weekend of football. So I got to catch up on some hockey things today, some Raptors things today. And I want to start with this. So over the weekend, who'd the Leafs play on Saturday? Was that the Columbus? No, it wasn't Columbus. Was it the Columbus game? Ottawa. No, it was the Ottawa game. Right, of course. I did this whole thing on Ottawa. Yeah, duh. I'm brain dead. It's fine. I can't remember what I did yesterday. But Elliot's on the Saturday headlines. And he mentions, in talking about the Rantanen trade, that this could be a sign of teams' projections of their own internal caps. That we're projecting the salary cap to make a pretty significant jump this season. And then clearly another jump after that. And if it's as significant, we're looking at a $100 million cap, which is awesome for the players. But mostly it's awesome for fans. The idea that not every team would want to spend up to that salary cap. And obviously they're going to have a floor. But this is maybe going to fix the NHL for me. And I get that. I'm doing a show here in Toronto, and I look at a lot of the league's issues through the lens of a Toronto Maple Leafs, like a person who covers the Leafs. But I got to tell you, that is one of the things that drives me nuts about this hard cap and luxury, no luxury tax. I've talked about it ad nauseum on this program, nonstop, about the idea of the hard cap is stupid. I don't want the Florida Panthers to have more at, like, greater advantages than the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs have to have an advantage outside of, well, you can get ads here. Or you can have a greater legacy here. Yeah, that works for some guys. Doesn't work for everybody. I don't know how many guys in professional sports are willing to forego millions of dollars for the legacy quotient. Not until they've made a ton of it at the end of their career, right? Look at who the Leafs hit on. Tavares is the only real free agent of consequence that came here during his prime, and it was still market value as much as we do the, he could have gotten more money with the Sharks. Like, yeah, okay. He wanted to live at home. He's from the area. He wanted to be here specifically, but it's a very rare case. The idea of legacy, I think that's more for us than it is for the players. I think their feeling is, yeah, if I win three cups with the Florida Panthers, people are probably going to remember me. Like, yeah, are we going to remember you as much? Maybe, probably not. But I don't think I'm going to forget who Anje Kopitar is for the rest of my life, right? Like, how many times do you see clips from the Blackhawks runs, and I know that's Chicago, so we're trending closer into being like a market that matters, but I'm just saying that you stack them up and you win multiple, you're feeling fine. The Vegas Golden Knights players probably feel the same way. It's like Jonathan Marchessault is going to go down in history of being like the original, what were they called? The Misfits? Yeah. He's a misfit. Oh, so I think a lot of that's overplayed. We found out that the commercial money is overrated in this country. It's not the United States. It's not Travis Kelce getting an ad that's going to pay him tens of millions of dollars. You're getting some cash. It's nice. It's a nice little perk. There's a reason why you see all of them doing it, right? There's a reason why you see, I think the list right now is Morgan Riley, William Nylander, Austin Matthews as his own burger. Like, they get some cash, but it's not enough to like fully tilt the scales, right? With the taxation and living in an expensive city. And so the idea that all of a sudden you could have a salary cap that removes some of these teams from spending Uber dollars. And the other part of it too is gives a little bit of an excuse even for some of those other groups that might be wanting to spend that are in rebuilds to say, yeah, why would we be spending $100 million on a rebuild team, right? Like everybody's spending to the cap essentially these days. It's like it's been so low for so long, it's kind of hard to avoid it no matter what state your franchise is in. And so I like it for a multitude of reasons. It's not just for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's for one of the things that I think has been missing here in hockey over the last little bit, which is the idea that you can't have continuity. You can't have these teams that you roll year over year over year and get super familiar with the players. It's like every season there's a new supporting cast to your stars, or you do lose stars. And so I'll get into the Rantanen stuff later and explain why I don't hate it as much as like the groupthink internet did. But I gotta say, if I was a Leafs fan, that piece of news and the potential for that is far more exciting than anything they're doing at this year's trade deadline. It just is. You wish it would have come a little bit sooner, but damn, that is hope for a league that really thrives on familiarity with teams. I really like it when teams can continue to challenge and try to win back-to-back Stanley Cups, try to go for multiple, try to actually have dynastic runs. And I'm tired of trying to just constantly reward the smallest organizations, some of the cheapest organizations, and some of the smallest fan groups in the NHL. So good news on the horizon. Anyways, Anthony Petrelli is a writer for Maple Leafs Hot Stove. He's one of my favorites. You can always check out his Monday Notes column on said website. It's a must read for Leafs fans. What's up, buddy? How are we doing? We're going to go over some of those things from the Notes column today.
I'm good. How are you doing?
We're doing all right. Hold on. My headphone just got a little messed up. I hear you now. So I want to start with this. You've kind of pointed out how many man games lost the Leafs have had to injury so far this season. You got conspiracy theories? You're usually like very based in the rational. I was surprised to see this take from you. You're weighing in on fans in the latest column. You're weighing in on conspiracy theories with injuries. What do you got?
Yeah, I really try not to get involved in that stuff. I don't know if you ever talked to Justin Bourne about this. Have you ever spoken to Justin about this?
Yeah, to a degree.
Because I know I don't want to, you know, fully speak for him. It's not about him, but I know he's had some similar thoughts. I mean, it's not just a conspiracy theory. They're hurt every year. Like, they're firmly a top 10 most injured team every year. I think, you know, the conspiracy side might be, you look at Craig Berube, newcomer in the group, and how many players now has he come out and been like, yeah, this guy's like, he's good. And then he misses 3 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever it is. And, you know, I get Craig Berube's not a doctor. He's not, you know, the ultimate medical opinion that's making the call on a guy. I get, you know, sometimes a player, you know, doesn't necessarily get hurt immediately, you know, or it doesn't come to, you know, light immediately, and it might take a day or two before, but it's a regular occurrence now where, I don't know, these guys are constantly injured and they're constantly treated with an overabundance of caution. And it's kind of like a fine line of nobody's saying these guys should be playing hurt and, you know, putting themselves in jeopardy, but it's also saying this is a contact sport and a contact league, and you're going to be playing less than 100%, honestly, more often than not. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs milk it to the nth degree, it seems, from the outside looking in. And, you know, some degree if you talk to people from the inside looking in. So, you know, the end of the day, the playoffs are a war. They are. It's a 2 month, you know, basically every other day you're lucky to close a series early. And you look at the injury list of every team that's gone to the Cup final, and it's insane. And the Leafs, you know, after 2 weeks, it's exhausting every year. And no one was even really hurt last year. Connor Dewar is the only guy who had surgery in the offseason. After all that, after all the drama of last season or last playoffs, which I'm sure you remember, like there was nothing else to cover at one point. It was just like, who's in the lineup on any given night?
And yeah. I think it's a fair thing to raise. I would say that my one thought that does come to mind when it comes to like them being top 10 is, you know, you look at a thing like last year where they sign a guy like Klingberg, right? And then he immediately ends up on IR for the entire season. Like they are a team that is willing to kind of take those risks. Same thing with Hakanpää this season, right? Where How much of those guys is like bumping their number up? Two is, it does seem to be the same guys that generally get hurt. Like, it does feel as though I'm usually a little reluctant to give guys like the injury prone moniker, but we're kind of trending towards that territory a little bit with Austin Matthews. I think we're certainly trending towards that territory with Bobby McMahon. I mentioned it on my show the other night that we're getting fairly close even with Matthew Nyes, even though they've been some unlucky ones. But this is now three times where a physical player has been knocked out of the lineup from physical plays. So it's like, okay, something to monitor, especially when he's a younger player. You've had goaltending ones, which I feel like every team kind of ends up dealing with. So like, there's a part of it to me where it's like, it maybe gets a little bit more concerning if it's other guys. Like Tavares is one this year as a freak accident. He hasn't really missed any time. So it's kind of like a group of usual suspects that end in out of the lineup. But to the baby in point, I think there is some merit to that. And I will say, like, it's always really hard to question guys with the head injury stuff, but I could not believe what a non-story it ended up being that William Nylander was in a documentary where he had like friends over watching hockey and celebrating loudly with like bright lights on when he was out with, you know, a migraine. I was like, okay, that's a bit of a tough look, but okay. Like, is that the culture of every single sports team that if you're like, if my guys take off work sick, I don't really want to see that. You know, like, I kind of want to see pictures of them in bed in the dark.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it too, and again, these are the trickiest injuries to kind of observe from the outside looking in. And again, nobody's saying that guys should play through things that are unreasonable to play through.
But sure.
Like, Max Pacioretty returned. Like, he didn't, like, that didn't, the shot didn't knock him out of the game. Like, he wore a fishbowl and he played. And now he's missed a week and change. Like, that's just, you know, it's these are the kinds of things I referenced Berube where he's kind of going, yeah, the guy's okay. And he's just not okay. And he ends up missing weeks on end. And, you know, to your point as well, though, it's not like Nylander was in a dark room. Like, you know, he wasn't in a dimly lit area and you were sitting there going, okay, well, you know, man, this guy couldn't even get out of, couldn't even sit
this guy's in hell.
No,
it's like he had his buddies over there, like high-fiving.
We were doing the exact same thing watching the playoffs, but so it's those, these are the ones where, again, it's hard to look and no one's saying that a guy should play through a concussion or something like that.
No, you can agree that you don't have the full medicals on something, but that it can also be handled poorly optically, which is part of this conversation and has been for the Leafs all season long. I do think that this year in particular with the like, hey, he's day to day and then he ends out for a multitude of weeks. I give them, I guess, a bit more of a grace period with this season in particular with the Four Nations where it's felt like, hey, they're either not playing for 2 weeks and you like, okay, so they want to milk that injury a little bit, or they end up playing 85 games in a week and you go, oh, okay. Like, I could see them not wanting to put the entire stress test on someone that's not 100% and that they are having a little bit more of an added luxury with the way that the division has gone. Like, again, you pointed this out in your recent piece that Leafs have been pretty like middling as of late. They've had some really good performances. It's felt like very feast or famine. I think, in January, what, they're 7-5? Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're 7-5. Yeah, but no one's made any ground on them. So they kind of get to play it a little bit more conservatively. I do wonder what it would look like if it's down the stretch getting closer to the postseason and Florida is somewhere like 2 points back if they're handling this the same way.
Yeah, and I guess part of my question back to that would be, you know, just over the years of, I think they've had this kind of approach for years now because they firmly, this isn't the first time they've, you know, been at the top of the division this late, but by this point in the season, generally speaking, you and I could shrug and go, okay, well, they're going to finish second or third.
Yeah.
Right. So they've kind of been fairly locked in safely. I wonder how much that they're preparing these guys for playoffs. It just every year it feels like a little bit of a circus. They're always missing key guys. I get injuries are going to happen in playoffs. It was really striking last year. With the amount of key guys that missed games, one of my first thoughts after they got eliminated is like, I'm, very curious to see the injury report
Yeah.
What kind of surgeries and whatnot are we looking at based on like the overall surface that it was for 2 weeks, where it was just like guys constantly like stunningly missing games. And, you know, that was honestly the biggest reason I last year beat Boston, in my opinion. I mean, Boston needed multiple key injuries and still just won an overtime game 7, and mm-hmm. Boston was essentially healthy the entire time.
Yep.
And I kind of came away from that after there was no real injury of significance other than Connor Dewar, mm-hmm. going, how could they possibly get through the full grind of the playoffs? Like, you can't do what they did for 2 weeks of that just, you know, mess of a situation for, you know, three more times. Like, it was just like impossible to sit there and say like, yeah, they could definitely do this and run the gamut. And then you look at, you know, what Edmonton's grinding through, and you look through what Florida's grinding through and what Florida grinded through the year before, and so on and so forth. And it just, like, that is part of it. Like, you have to be able to play and play at a high level.
Yeah.
And, like, manage pain tolerance. It's the one thing I constantly come back to, is just sitting there going, can you imagine these guys actually doing it? It's hard to at this point.
Yeah,
for any number of reasons.
I think it's a super interesting thing to raise. Some people will get their back up to this immediately because they're just going to automatically take the position of like, how could you question a player who says they're hurt, right? Like, I'm not talking to those people. You already have your, like, that's fine. You know, you can take that position. I think that it's an interesting thought, and I'm glad that you brought it to light. Okay, so I want to get to a couple of other things before we let you go here. One is that, you know, you pointed out in the Columbus game that, hey, Merzlikins played really well, and there were definitely some rush opportunities early in that game that Toronto didn't take advantage of, and then another one late with Nylander. But ultimately, you saw Columbus strategically do something that Toronto has really struggled with in the past, and which has contributed to those postseason exits about as much as anything, which is, hey, pack the paint, make them play on the outside. It's something that I talk a lot about on Leafs Talk, which is how many nights are there like a certain amount of players playing on the perimeter. And usually, like, I'm pretty hyper fixated on that, especially when it comes to like some of the depth scoring guys. I do think that some of the players have done a much better job at that, but you see that really missing when like they lose a guy like John Tavares from the lineup, right? But you'd made a really good point about the idea that even when guys are getting to those spots, they need a little bit more from their blue line in terms of funneling pucks through and getting them actually towards the net. And so I'm curious, you know, what you see with the defense right now, their attempts to contribute offense, because it's been a big talking point for a lot of the season. I think it's tamped down a little bit as of late with like Oliver Ekman-Larsson's added scoring. But yeah, you're a huge tape guy. What do you see with the offense right now in terms of why they're not getting more from their blue line?
A few things. I mean, first off is just the obvious one, like not enough talent. Just across the board, right?
Like
it's the easiest answer possible.
A lot of people are seeing that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would fight that. And then you get into, obviously, Morgan Riley's not having, he's not having a great season. You know, like there's things you could point to and say he's, you know, eating some minutes and he's playing with poor partners. And I have some time for those arguments. Like, I think the partner one is valid. I don't think anyone believes that Morgan Riley's a stud number one defenseman. So by default, if he's not that, then he needs to have a good partner. And Philip Myers is not a high end quality established partner in the league. And, you know, Oliver Ekman-Larsson on his right side in the top four is also not a high end quality partner. Like, he needs to have a good partner, and he hasn't had that. But that aside, he just hasn't really contributed offensively. I mean, they just really struggle to have any sort of point shot presence. If you go back to that Columbus game, there were at least 7 to 10 chances where there was nobody actively challenging a defenseman on their team with the puck, but they hung, you know, the top of the circle and just kind of fronted the shot, the old Ron Wilson shot fronting, you remember back in the day. And the Leafs couldn't get the shot through. Like, they couldn't even get it through the first layer. And if you were looking at the net, there were two guys there. Like, it was set up the way Craig Berube would have wanted it to be set up. And it was either the shot couldn't get through or they actively passed up what I would consider a pretty good look at a shot. Like if you're an NHL defenseman and you have, you know, 3 to 5 feet of space and traffic in front, like that's a good shooting opportunity. Like you need to get it through the first layer, the winger, and you kind of see what happens from there. But if you get it through the first guy, you have two at the net, like you've got a decent chance of something good happening from it. And we've seen this a lot from teams, right? Like Boston did it to the Leafs last year in the playoffs, and you can go through most of their playoff series and you could see teams doing it to them where they just say, okay, well, we're going to collapse heavily on the Leafs forwards and we will dare the Leafs defense to make us about the strategy. They didn't. The Leafs spent, 70% of the game in Columbus's end?
Mm-hmm.
Like they had chances. I mean, there were other things that they missed too. You don't often see Nylander miss two breakaways, let alone, you know, hit a post on a wide open net kind of thing. So, you know, they could have had other goals for sure. But ultimately, if teams are just going to sit back and do that, you need some guys that can make you pay. The other thing I wonder as well as part of it is, one thing we see happen a lot is like Mitch Marner likes to pull up high, right? Like how many times you see Mitch Marner at the top of the point at 5-on-5 now? You know, he loves that kind of shot, sifting it through traffic. William Nylander loves to come up high. I wouldn't say Max Domi loves to come up high, but he definitely doesn't like going to the net. So he's somewhere in the high area trying to get the puck. And the defense don't play well off of it. Like if anything, when Marner does it, they just kind of take themselves out of the play. Mm-hmm. They don't incorporate themselves in. I think that's why you've heard Craig Berube, and I've mentioned it a few times and shown some of the quotes from him where he's mentioned like the D pushing down a little bit and getting more involved, because like Marner will get the puck at the top and then they just kind of stand at the boards and watch. So a few things, like just more motion, but like being able, you know, to shoot pucks through traffic, like that is a skill. Like you can't have that game where you spend 70% of the time in Columbus's end and Morgan Riley gets zero shots on net. Like it just can't happen.
Yeah. a couple things there. One, I think that you really actually see the importance of just having a threat from the top with the power play right now. Like their last five games, they're at 36%. And I know some people just are going to point to that and be like, oh, it's because they don't have the best five guys out there all the time. It's like, no, to me, the reason that this is happening is actually the pivot away from Morgan Riley, his reluctance to shoot. And one of the things that you're seeing a lot now with Marner up top is he's not afraid to shoot the puck, and he is good at filtering it towards the net. And granted, there's one less skater out there, and so you're more likely to get a puck to the net. But like you've seen how effective that is just with what the Leafs have been able to generate in the paint or in those areas. And yeah, Marner himself, just in terms of shooting it from that spot, which you so rarely see when the Leafs are there. What I think is interesting too, though, with the Riley stuff is that his shots, like his shot attempts per game are not like crazy off what his, you know, normal trajectories are. Like his shooting percentage is actually up from last season. Like, It's not good. It's at 6%, but he's never been like a sniper outside the one season where he scored 20 goals. And yeah, he had a nine. Yeah. It was a kind of like a dramatic uptick for him, but ultimately like the game to me, whenever I'm trying to watch him and we do the stuff about like the system and like what's changing with him, I don't view him as like materially different in the offensive zone than what we've seen in the past. I do think that there's something to be said about his skating. I think there's certainly something to be said about his exits and the idea that they are way more of a like, hey, just chip it out over carry the puck out. Like they're not the same possession team that they've been in years past. But what do you see with Riley? Like where is this drop off coming? Because I do think there's an element of confirmation bias at play that whenever he makes a mistake, we're blowing it up because of some of those other numbers. But what to you stands out the most in terms of being like the most valid criticism of why he's having such a down season?
I think they're just the Leafs in general, which we know is statistically true. They're just creating way less off the rush. And so with that, that's the best part of his game. It's activating as a fourth forward, as, you know, the far side guy high. You look back to, you know, his most recent goal, the overtime winner against Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yes, it's 3-on-3, but like that is a good shot for him. Like he doesn't have a good point shot, kind of what we just talked about, but he does actually have a good wrister from inside the top of the circle off the rush.
Yeah, he does.
If he winds it up, like, it's a problem. And you saw it on that Flyers goal, right, where he gets inside, he's around the hash mark, and he easily rips it by. Like, he looks like a forward scoring that goal. And those opportunities are just, they're not nearly as often. I think you still see some decent things in terms of him, you know, passing the puck up the ice, but the Leafs aren't, you know, they aren't generating many opportunities where the defensemen are actively going all the way down the ice and joining the attack straight up. Like, some sort of breakdown of sorts would have to happen, almost the way that they kind of play it systemically, and the way that they, you know, they want to chip pucks off the wall and have the far side winger slash across, and they want to get pucks in deep. And like, the adjustment is going to be needing to create more offense from just like within, you know, half court, if you want to call it that, you know, like the basketball, like, now we're in the offensive zone and everybody's set, and you need to find a way to kind of break through this. And he can do it. Like, when he had a great playoff series against Tampa, just like a micro example, like, ton of those plays were just him getting shots through traffic. And like, so it's not like he's incapable of doing it, right? He was just ripping little, you know, sifting wristers through multiple times that either ended up goals for himself, including an overtime winner, or were tipped or deflected or whatever the case. Like, he has some ability to do it. It just, like, I think it's a bit more of like a new normal for him, so to speak, where like, this is the way that they want to play and generate offense. And I think you kind of see Craig Berube, I don't want to say bending the knee, but like trying to give him a few more opportunities or push him to say like, okay, like, join the rush, or, you know, you're seeing more of like Mitch Marner pulls up high, like Morgan Riley will be almost at the net sometimes. Like, he's just like, he's actively pushing down and trying to get more involved that way. So I just, you know, this is Morgan Riley's first new coach in 5 years. And there were a lot of similarities. Like, you know, Sheldon Keefe didn't like rewrite the book from what Mike Babcock did on the ice, like off the ice, yes, but like on the ice, it wasn't, you know, a drastic shift in play. So
yeah, no, in fact, it was partially like, hey, we're already ready for you to basically step in and do a lot of the same things.
Yeah, I'm just going to treat you guys better.
Yeah, literally the big change was Tyson Barrie's ice time. Like, that was it. In terms of the way they played, it was no different.
Yeah, so, you know, this is what, his first time with a new system of sorts in like 10 years?
Yeah.
And he's struggling to adjust to it. Like, some guys, you know, it's just like at any job, right? You got a new boss, and some people are great at it, and some people, it takes some time to warm up to it and whatnot. Like, you know, you kind of feel the same way about a lot of things. Like, you have to sit back sometimes and go, like, we're 50 games in. Like, it's a lot of time, but at the same time, it's also not a lot of time.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, you imagine some of these guys are going to dial it up for, you'd like to think anyway, for the stretch drive and the playoffs, and things will kind of shake out as they do. But, like, there's still a ton of time here for him to adjust. But, yeah, it hasn't been, like, he's playing to a 36-point pace. Like, that's just not... it's just not good enough.
Yeah. So I've referenced this before, but I was talking to, who was it? It was Rick Bonus. It was like about a month and a half ago, and he was talking about how he really just didn't feel like year one with the Jets was guys getting all the systems and him being able to get the most out of every player. It was year two where he felt like everybody started to get it. Everybody was on the same page. Everyone had their acclimation period, and you started to see fewer guys like really struggle with the adjustments they had to make. And I am, to a degree, believing that is going to be part of the case with the Leafs and a guy like Morgan Riley. But I do find the playoffs and this kind of like stretch run to be of particular interest with him, because if you're the Leafs and the idea is, okay, he's not a number one defenseman, and I know the cap's going up, so 7.5 is just really not going to be this like unmanageable number. But still, it's not nothing. It's a number of consequence, especially for this team that is going to also continue to have to give guys raises. Like, they want to give Marner an extension. They want to give Tavares an extension. Okay, well, guess what that's going to come at? More of the same cap percentages that you're seeing now, less so with Tavares, but maybe more so with Marner. Either way, if the idea is you can't get all of the skills out of this player that he presents. Like, because of the way that you play, you don't think he's going to fit, and you need to also add in the money to pair him with somebody that actually fits and be working that as a part of a quotient. That makes things a little bit more complicated, and I do think that during the offseason, if things flame out, things don't get better, it at least has to raise the idea, which is weird because it's like, what do you need? Offense from your blue line. What is he supposed to do? That. Moving him out feels kind of counterproductive to what the long-term goal is, but yeah, I would be very interested to hear from that front office and that coaching staff after this full season what they think the long-term trajectory is and whether they think this is something that's going to get materially better if we don't see any signs of it really this season. Hey, buddy, I know you got to run. Thanks so much for making time today. I appreciate it as always.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, dude. Anthony Petrelli of Maple Leafs Hot Stove. You can go read his Monday notes every Monday. And they're usually chock full of stuff. We didn't even get to like a lot of the things. Actually, one thing I want to mention just quickly before we take a break, because I do want to talk about the Raps today. Okay. This is getting to be a lot. 6 out of 7 wins, ripping 4 straight, watching them yesterday. They blew this huge lead and I still felt like, don't worry, which is strange because in a couple weeks ago, I would have been like, it's over. They're dead. And right now I'm watching them going, I think they're going to be just fine here. This is okay. Let New Orleans have their little run, their cute little run. A team that, by the way, won a lot of games last year with pretty much the same personnel. Yeah, no Brandon Ingram. Ooh. Anyway, one thing that he raised in the piece that I didn't get to him or get to with him. That's how you speak. Is the idea of not completely loading up this first line as they're hurt. I talked about it a little bit with Myrtle last week, the idea of like, hey, is this the time where maybe you actually do split up Marner and Matthews, given that you're missing so much talent down the lineup? They're not going to do it. They're just not going to do it. But the one thing that I do think they should be doing right now is making sure that Nylander has somebody to play with, and that person not just being like Max Domi, who has struggled immensely this season. I think that he's played really well with Bobby McMahon, and I'd be leaving Bobby McMahon with him. He's already getting extra power play time. Everybody understands that McMahon has taken this huge step this season. But yeah, Nylander just has not had a lot of consistency with the players that he's been with this year. He is also somebody that I don't think has struggled really because of it. It's pretty, like, the proof of concept is there that he can drive a line with just about anybody on it, especially as he continues to like cheat the way that he does to get these breakaways where it's like every single night he's getting now. It's gone from he's getting one every night to he's getting two every game. Like, yeah, a one is a low number now for Nylander when it comes to breakaways. But I do want to see that talent spread out a little bit when we watch the Leafs play on Wednesday, assuming that they don't get a bunch of guys back. And even if they do get a bunch of guys back, like they get a nice, then it solves your issue. But without it, like, yeah, I kind of feel like McMahon and Nylander, the way that they've played together so far this season, the speed, the pace that they play with, I like the fit. I'd like to see him kind of be maybe one of his permanent line mates. Anyways, we got to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and I'm going to dig in on the Raptor stuff. And I actually think that there's like a real philosophical question that they need to ask themselves based on this tiny little stretch, not to completely overreact, but at least just ask some questions. But before we do that, Morgan Wallen has announced his I'm the Problem tour with stops in Toronto on September 4th and 5th. To celebrate, we're giving you a chance to beat the box office and win a pair of tickets to the show at the Rogers Center on September 4th. All you need to do is tune in to this podcast, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Listen for the code word, then text the code word to 590-590. Standard message and data rates apply. Today's code word is, I think they're going to get this one. Because apparently there was some like spelling issues the last couple of days with this guy's name, which does lead me to wonder how big of fans some people are trying to go to the show. But today's code word is tour. Text tour to 590-590 right now to enter for your chance to win. If you don't win with us, today is your last day to register for the Artist Presale at signup.ticketmaster.com/Morgan Wallen. God, it was clunky. That's not great. I'm not getting any commercial work after that. But yeah, Morgan Wallen coming to town. So send tour to 590-590 right now. Quick break and let's talk about what the Raps got to do.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So I'm enjoying watching Raptors games again. Yes, the tank is being tanked. They're tanking the tank. It's the Uno reverse card. It's the call the ambulance, not for me, but for you. All of a sudden, the Raps are what? Sixth? Sixth worst record in the NBA? Yeah. Ugh. That's not as good as what they were at one point, which was third worst record in the NBA. And here's the thing, too, is like, you're like, oh, don't worry, there's plenty of time. They could strip this all down. The teams at the bottom, I don't know if they're like, I don't know how many of those guys are going to win six more games this season. This is permanent damage, sir. This wasn't like, oh, I just had a weekend away where I smoked a couple cigarettes and I had a little bit too much to drink. It's like, no, no, no. This was a pack a day for 4 years. This was a lot. You did some damage here. This is not nothing, what you did. It's not everything, but it's something. It's not good. So it's tough because what did Cooper Flagg score last night? 28 points, 23 in the fourth quarter or in the second half?
28
with 23 in the second half, right?
23 in the second half, yeah.
Yeah. He's good at basketball is what I'm noticing. And we're also, like, it's February soon. You know what comes after February?
March Madness.
Yeah. And you know it's the shortest month?
February.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So all of a sudden, we're right around the corner from actually having not just the hardcores, but the general public at large getting a peek at these dudes. And they're in a tough spot. They really are. I was always afraid of this, and I had a tweet that went out at one point that people have tried to like dunk on me on whenever the Raptors lose a basketball game. They're like, you sure about this, fam? Why did you say the Raptors are too good? I'm like, yeah, because I think they are. They're too good to tank comparatively with some of the teams that are at the bottom when they start to get healthy. When they've lost a ton of bodies, Jakob Poeltl, for example, Scotty Barnes, for example, they can't win these games. When they get all these guys back and they get some games together, look at this. Do I think they're beating the Celtics with regularity? No. Do I think that it's pretty daunting, by the way, as well, with this four-game win streak and six of their last seven, that their next two games are, I believe, Washington and Chicago? Chicago did beat Denver last night, so there is some hope. How do I know? Because it cooked me on a parlay. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Denver. I'm supposed to believe in you as champions, and you behave this way. Here's the thought right now. You're not sitting Scotty Barnes when he doesn't have an injury. I've said it before. This can't be a wasted season for him. It's already become a wasted season for Quickly. They have found out nothing about Quickly other than he's tiny and he gets hurt. That's it. Congrats. You found out that he gets hurt. I know that they've probably gone with an abundance of caution here, but it's been pretty damn disappointing, the Quickly experience, because he hasn't been able to get on the court. I know some of you remain steadfast in your belief that this guy's going to become a superstar, but as I said last week, it's pretty damn telling that Grange writes a piece and says that he's not an untouchable. Grady Dick has taken a step this year. You're obviously playing him as much as possible. You want to see what he looks like. Jakob Poeltl, I do not believe, is going anywhere. If you really did want a tank, then he's the guy that you remove and you try to get a big trade package back for, but it doesn't appear to be the case that the Raptors are getting these just phenomenal offers in a really difficult trade landscape for Jakob Poeltl. And that if they do trade him, the value coming back has been always pretty suspect to me. It's a tough one. It's weird because Jakob Poeltl cost them a first round pick. They're not really going to win any games from Jakob Poeltl. Maybe he's helped with the development of Scotty Barnes and some of these players. He was certainly phenomenal last night, but like, he might end up costing you something that is worse than the first round pick that you traded away, which is a top three pick because he's too good when he's in the lineup. And he's probably, yeah, in the top 12 to 13 centers in the NBA right now, the way that he's playing. It's like, and the drop off when he's out is significant. It is large. So here's where I'm at with the vets. Now it's kind of becoming a similar thing as the Jakob Poeltl conversation. How could it not? Like, yes, Jakob Poeltl's under contract, right? So there's a bit of a difference there where you're saying, hey, you've actually invested in this guy. You've got guys like Brown and Boucher that don't have long-term deals, that aren't part of your, like, supposed core, are not someone that's supposed to be eating major minutes. But Brown has looked pretty damn good as of late. Like, he looks like a pretty solid fit on this team, and he has also just expressed a desire to stay. Now, he obviously needs to get paid. He left the Denver Nuggets defending a championship to go get, what was it, like a 3-year deal with the Indiana Pacers? Might have even been only a 2-year deal, I guess, because he only played 1 year there while he was trading. So, yeah, I think it's a 2-year deal with the Pacers. That's all he got. So he left.
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. What was it?
45.
Yeah, 45. Ugh, I was off. I was going to guess 36. So he took a big old bag of money to leave. My guess is that as much as he's saying to Blake Murphy in the Raptor show that he's willing to, or that he wants to be in Toronto, he doesn't want to move because he's been bounced around a bunch, blah, 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 that ultimately dollars are going to dictate the Bruce Brown situation. I don't think he's going to stay with a rebuilding team that doesn't have the chance of winning a championship for the next couple of seasons simply because he doesn't want to move around a lot. Like, nah, forgive me if I don't believe that. But if Jakob Poeltl is being viewed as important to this team to help find out what you have with the players, and your group is starting to coalesce and start to play really good basketball, and last night the offense was clunky to start and it was a bit of a rock fight to begin the game, but ultimately it was another one where I thought the Raptors dug in on defense, played with some energy, played with some effort, didn't fold when the moment started to get difficult. It was a massive third quarter for the Pelicans. They kicked the Raptors' teeth in that quarter, and you thought the group that has we've seen throughout this season, that's where they start to fold up shop, and they let the game slip away. How many of the early parts of the season when they were in close games, did they just not, you know, close down the stretch? And that was one of the things. All of a sudden, they closed down the stretch, and they've done that a lot recently. So you're not trading Jakob Poeltl. Scotty Barnes looks healthy and is going to be playing basketball games. You're not trading RJ Barrett at the deadline, so that's out. The team is going to be able to remove some veteran pieces around them. So you can take Chris Boucher off this roster, right? You can end up trading him. That hurts because he's doing a classic Chris Boucher thing, which is every once in a while, Chris Boucher shows you when he gets hot from three and he gets a few added minutes, he gets hot and he makes it look like he's a stud. And with all due respect to Chris, I would be selling on him right now, especially if a contender believes that he is like a genuine missing piece. That's just, again, my opinion. You can have your own on Chris Boucher. I don't think he's like a great long-term investment for this team and what they need. So take it for what you will. Kelly Olynyk, don't need him around the team for a long term. See you later. But ultimately, good character guy, does have a NBA function, like is a pick and pop big, which is something that you also want to be able to see with, like if you remove Boucher and Kelly Olynyk, that's both pick and pop bigs gone, right? For some of the floor spacing that we've seen here, for some of the playmaking that we've seen with Scotty Barnes that you want to see from Scotty Barnes. So if you take both those guys away, what are you losing in terms of development when you don't have a player with that skill set on your roster anymore? What are you getting back in return? Are you getting some salary filler? You're getting some second round picks? Do you put a ton of stock into second round picks? I genuinely think these are conversations that they probably are asking right now that they wouldn't have been a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. It would have just been an obvious, hey, we're really bad. Let's make this team even worse. Let's still let Scotty play. Let's let RJ play. Let's let Grady play. Let's let Jakob Poeltl play. We win a few games here and there, whatever, but ultimately we're not going to be deep enough. But part of this streak has not simply just been Scotty Barnes looking awesome. It's Scotty Barnes looking awesome in an atmosphere surrounded by what has been real NBA talent with the Bruce Browns of the world, with the Chris Bouchers of the world, with the Kelly Olynyks of the world. And so I do think there's got to be a point of diminishing return here now with this group where they're looking at it and saying, how far down the standings can we actually get even if we take some of these pieces out? Maybe they still feel like they can. But to me, with Barnes playing this way where it's like player of the week and just awesome defense, getting to his spots better, I think being much, 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 much smarter with his shot selection. That's been something that I've really noticed with Scotty over the stretch. Again, in part, because there's pieces around him that he can trust outside of just pick a G League guy, right? What do you decide to do? I don't think it's as clear anymore. I would still be leaning towards get the value for the role players, but I'll admit, as much as I'm Team Tank and as much as I think that's the only real truthful, that's the real avenue for Toronto to get a star, man. Even when we point to the Kawhi example and they did win a championship, like as a, hey, they got the number one guy, it took an extraordinary set of circumstances that we don't address enough. Like you had a guy that the Spurs were trying to punish by not letting him go to LA. They did not want him to go to the Lakers, and they turned down what was arguably a better trade package to go with something that was going to help them maintain their culture and win and go with DeRozan. They got a pick. They got Poeltl. It was, you know, a bad trade for the Spurs in terms of like long-term crazy value. I guess it probably would have been the same with the Lakers because I think they wanted two of three at least, or they wanted all three of Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and Kyle Kuzma from the Lakers. In order to get it done, the Lakers were like, we'll give you two of the three. And then none of those guys turned out to be anything too great. So, yeah, maybe the DeRozan trade ended up even being better. But it wasn't even just that. It was that Kawhi did come here, he won a championship, and he still left. In order to get a real running mate for Scottie Barnes, you're not looking at another Kawhi trying to get a flyer of a rental one-in-a-million moonshot. You're trying to find someone that is paired with Scottie Barnes the way that you're seeing other star players around the league, and most specifically the two teams that are contending for the championship the most this season, even with Boston's dry spell here, I still think that they're the favorite in the Eastern Conference, and Oklahoma City, like those guys have real running mates. Like Jason Tatum has a real running mate. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has real running mates, plural. That's what you're looking for with Scottie Barnes. You're not looking for the, like, hey, accumulate the assets until the point that you can maybe get a star. And you're even seeing, like, with this, the way the landscape is, A, it's not easy to make that swing for a star, but God, you gotta be able to deplete your roster to a point. The way the Raps are going to do this is through the draft. They kind of need to hit on one of these three guys, and yet what's best for the guy right now is to have other players around him. It's a tough one.
Aren't you at the point, though, that you want to see Scottie do it on his own?
But the thing is he's never going to be an on-his-own guy, and nobody's on his own guy. Like, that's kind of a myth that we build up in our heads where it's like, is it a true number one? I'm like, yeah, for sure. But, like, there's only a select few of those guys that are in the league. Like, look at Denver, for example. They've been better as of late, right? Russell Westbrook's been awesome for them, and Jamal Murray has started to normalize from basically having one foot in the grave, one foot in retirement. He's starting to look like Jamal Murray again, which is huge for them. But they have Nikola Jokic on their team. Unquestionably, and by the way, unquestionably, we can have MVP debates with Shai this season, fine. There's one best basketball player on earth right now, and his name is Nikola Jokic. And it's actually like quite a large gap between him and anybody else. You're talking about number one guy in the league. It is him. No debate. If you question it, sorry. This is a sport of opinion, but this is an actual, you're factually wrong in this situation. It's kind of like hockey with McDavid, where you go, you know, there is a best player. And some guys can have nights where they do great, and some guys can have better seasons, whatever, but there's a best player, and that's Jokic here. They won a championship, and now it looks like a real struggle for them to ever get another one, and part of it has been the team around him has been depleted. He hasn't had a true number two star throughout the stretch. That's been part of the revelation with Jamal Murray, and it was certainly last year in the playoffs against Minnesota when Murray couldn't buy a bucket for large stretches against that team, and his physical limitations were, like, very clear and obvious. And so, yeah, I'm okay with seeing this from Scottie Barnes right now in terms of, like, the quote-unquote solo thing, not having a true co-pilot, not getting anything from Quickly right now. Maybe you end up getting more. But as I've always said, this was meant, the way that I always interpreted the season was it was a rebuild, but it was not supposed to be a tank throwaway. It was meant to be, hey, we're not really going to make the playoffs here, but you're going to see growth from our young players and you're going to see progression. And up until this recent stretch, I don't know how much you had seen. Frankly, even with Scottie Barnes, yeah, I've always known he can accumulate numbers, but this is a nice stretch where you're just seeing like a full package, complete game. And to his credit, small sample, I get it. I've seen him look like he's taking more ownership of this team as of late. These last few games, it feels like some of the effort plays that he's making, the way that he's remained engaged through a lot of these contests, and again, it's easier when the team is doing well and there's other pieces around you and you feel like you can win, but there has been a notable shift in Scottie Barnes to me as of late beyond just, hey, some really good box scores, which he's done throughout his career. Anyways, I still think you trade those pieces, the ones that I outlined. But I would say, I don't know if you're just giving them away. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. Sid Sixero is coming on the show. I want to talk to him about his Buffalo Bills, the level of heartbreak. All of a sudden, he's like, you know, he's reeling. He's reeling. Like, he's out on Allen. Like, he's out of it. But I do want to talk to him about, you know, Austin Matthews made some comments about the fans and whether or not players should be doing that and why, if not, because I took the opposite side of this. Like, I think it's totally fine for them to do it. And, yeah, the Blue Jays offseason, that's all next with Sid Sixero. Next. So I didn't get to weigh in on the Mikko Rantanen trade. I know that's what you're supposed to do on Twitter, but it was Friday night, and that's usually the only night of the week I get off because Leafs talk is often on Saturdays. So I do things on Friday, and so pardon me for not just Mikko Rantanen. Here's what I thought. No, leave me alone on Friday night. All right, if it would have been Mitch Marner, like some people were making the equivalency to, then yeah, fine. I'll jump on. I'll think of something. But Friday night, leave me alone. Don't do sports news like that on Friday nights. That's rude. That's just extremely rude stuff. All right? It's already essentially a 7-day work week until football's gone. It's just a fact. Football is work day. All right? It's the work I love, but it's a work day. Saturday night, work. Friday night, leave me alone. Don't trade Mikko Rantanen and expect me to have a thought on it right away. So, first of all, like I said, I don't hate it the way that the internet did. Okay, I saw the internet. I saw all your takes. Oh, how could they trade a good player for a worse player? Yeah, okay. It's really not that, but if that's the way you want to frame it, then yeah, Colorado is the biggest Dumbo organization that ever walked the face of the earth. They gave up a guy with what? His playoff points is outrageous. Rantanen has 101 points, 34 goals and 67 assists in 81 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That is hot. When people criticize the Leaf stars for not showing up in the postseason, it's like, blame guys like Nico Rantanen for existing, for that being something, okay? When people are like, well, Mitch Marner actually had 5 points. Well, yeah. Yeah, fine, thanks. Don't eat it. That's what we're looking for here. 81 Stanley Cup playoff games, a ring, and 101 points in 81 games. That's the thing. That is it right there. And the Avalanche traded one of those guys away, which is wild. Really is. And do I think it's risky for everybody involved? Absolutely, I do. Mikko Rantanen now is telling the media, oh, I'm shocked. I would have taken a huge haircut and blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry, bro. I'm not buying this. When he's saying I would have taken a cut for my market value, I think because he's saying I can get the most I want on the market because I have 101 playoff points in 81 playoff games, that to him, taking less than market value is not the concession that made sense for the Colorado Avalanche. They are looking to have a structure where Nathan McKinnon's at the top, and if you want to play with Nate Dogg and Cale Makar, you got to find a way to slot in with the group. You are going to have an internal cap structure that fits what the culture of your team is. You're not just going to, as some teams do, unnamed teams do, capitulate and give you whatever you want even when you haven't done squat. Okay? So that's where we're at with that. So on principle, I like it. I like the idea of the principle being, hey, we're sticking with the number, and if you don't like it, we're moving on. I also like the idea that if they really felt as though they were not going to re-sign this guy, because they just knew the way that things were going and they didn't want to risk it. That's the other part with Rantanen where he's like, oh, I didn't know we were in a rush. It's like, yeah, man, the deadline's coming up. And they don't want to let someone just go for free who carries this kind of value. Because as much as people want to criticize this trade, and it's fair to do it, right? Like, they acquired risk in it. They obviously acquired risk. They did get a depth center. They got a guy who's got a point of game this season, who can play in their top six, who plays with speed, and is under contract for another season. I don't love that, you know, he's not under contract for a little bit longer, but that still is something. You did get a second round pick and a fourth round pick, which you can also package into other deals that right now, like, look at the trade landscape. There's not too much out there, but look at some of the teams that you're competing with that have completely pilfered all of their draft picks. So yeah, obviously, I don't think that this is some just like monstrous slam dunk for the Avalanche. I never looked at it that way, but I just think it's reasonable to say, hey, you as a group have two guys. that were more important than this guy. If that guy wanted more than the other two guys and you felt as though the negotiations weren't going to go anywhere, get something for that guy rather than taking one run and then letting him walk for free. I now will say, of course, Marner gets brought up in it all, right? It's like, well, Marner, what were they? Yeah, everybody knows that he has a no-move clause, right? Like, we've gone over this to the nth degree. They're not asking him to waive it. Kiprios has been reporting for months that, hey, they're trying to re-sign him. He came on this podcast, I think, 2 months ago. Everyone always seems surprised when they hear that, where it's like, no, the Leafs are trying to get this done now. They're like, what? Well, why isn't it done yet? You decide. You know, you put that in your little mind. You think that one through, why it's not done. Leafs are trying. What does that mean? Anyways, it doesn't apply to the Marner situation really whatsoever, other than the idea that, like, the cat's already out of the bag for the Maple Leafs. Like, they don't have the opportunity to do this anymore. Anything else they do ends up being stupid because they already over-leveraged themselves. They already turned it, the culture, into just ask for whatever you want whenever you want it, and you'll get it. And now there's no really walking that back. Like, there's no, like, getting tough with it now. You already had in Colorado, part of the piece of this is that MacKinnon did take less. Makar did take less. And so if they felt as though the other guy wasn't going to be in line with what exactly they had done, they weren't willing to break what they thought was going to be a multi-year structure in order to do that, no matter how many playoff points this guy had. They felt like they were getting something. So from a, like, from a just like an organizational philosophy standpoint, I agree with what they did. It's extremely risky, but I actually think it's even riskier for Carolina, who has also done squat in the Stanley Cup playoffs and is now going to have to break the bank to keep this guy. Because if it's like he was thinking he was not going to take market value to be with the team that he won a Stanley Cup with and where he had two superstars to play with, yeah, my guess is that he's not going to be taking much of a haircut to stay in Carolina, okay? And go to Bates Pataglia's Bar and Grill. Sid Sixero of VT joins me now. What's up, buddy? How we doing?
Good, brother.
Oh, you're doing good.
Yeah, I am. I'm doing good.
I thought I felt bad texting you asking to come on and talk about the Bills heartbreak because, you know, like I try to leave people alone during times of extreme sports morning. That it's just this is a tough one. Like, was this one different for you in some regard? Because this felt different to me.
I'd slightly forgotten about the loss, and thanks for reminding me.
Oh, you forgot.
So no.
Well,
no, I feel terrible. I
told you what you were coming off for. This is your fault. Like, you could have declined.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me of all my pain.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. There is something about football losses, though, that sting more, you know? Like, the urgency of it, the oneness of it, and just when it's over, the pain lingers in a way that, for me, doesn't with other sports.
I mean, and you just feel it coming. Like, football is such a unique sport. Where it's like, when the Bills were down 7 with the ball, and they, like, I knew then it was over because the math doesn't math on what the Bills do. So you're telling me Josh Allen's going to tie this game up, and the defense will allow 0 points to Mahomes at home. There was no shot. And then Allen a second time will go down the field and do something he's never done, which is bat in a big game. Like, when Samuel, was it Samuel who tied the game up on the touchdown pass? I think it was Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, it was.
They went up at that point. Forgive me, they went up.
Yep.
And my wife goes, they just scored a touchdown. And I'm like, I don't care. Because Mahomes is about to take them down the field. Because this is now the seventh movie in the Lord of the Rings Kansas City Chiefs legacy, and I know how this is going to play. Football has a weird way of just kind of crushing you well in advance, not just in the moment, but well in advance. They were never pulling that off. It was never happening. And I love the Dalton Kincaid hate. It is the most inane garbage I've ever seen in my life. Of all the plays and moments in that football game to focus on, the stupidity of people who cannot see 3 feet in front of them, never mind in a sporting event, but in life probably, are going to focus on that play. It's a funny thing to watch something be broken down to this extent by a lot of people who have no idea what they're talking about. The Bills did not deserve a thing Sunday night, and they left with exactly what they had coming to them, which was nothing.
So to me, this one is like a death by a thousand cuts situation where it's for not sure. just like the one thing. It was like the all things to like, and I kind of tried to illustrate this point on my last pod of, hey, this is not just your head coach giving up the most points to the Chiefs every single year that they face you in the postseason, right? Where it's like, hey, the Chiefs, they just keep pounding the defensive coach and out coaching them. Hey, it's not just the slight differences in the big moments for the quarterbacks. It's also the general manager who let them take Xavier Worthy, right? And trade up to get the wide receiver they wanted. And then, of course, he comes back like the most predictable prophecy ever and bashes you in for the highest amount of receiving yards of any player in the game. And arguably, I would say the second best skill position player to Cook in that game, right? It's the drop by Kincaid, who is a first round pick for you. It is the plays of Elam, who they also took in the first round and can't get a stop at any juncture of the game. It is like the you continuously going to a fourth and inches sneak play that has been getting stuffed, and then you stick with it, and then you're begging for like the extra length of a football when you're on the road facing the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, I thought it was like an all-encompassing loss. One where, like, you can still, I still have belief that the Bills, as long as they do have Josh Allen, can accomplish great things, and that eventually maybe there is a stumble with the Chiefs, and I don't know, it's like you have to believe it. But ultimately, it's like, yeah, all of those things in conjunction to me are the greater conversation with the Bills in terms of how they get over the top. It's like, if you're going to ever beat Kansas City, you have to shore things up in just about every regard. But Allen, like, it seemed like Allen was the guy that you were most fixated on coming out of this game. Am I wrong?
A little bit, yeah. Like, more, the play calling also bothered me a great deal. But Allen discourse has to be front and center because of what it is. And if you're telling me Lamar Jackson can't get it done, you got to keep the same energy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's actually really fair.
And it the end of the game didn't bother me as much as the start of the game for Josh Allen, which no one's talking about. He was a child out there. He was scared out of his mind. You're not going to a Super Bowl with this guy, with that at it, to start the game. Every interview he did all week was kicking around his head. Right when that game began, because he pressed on every snap, basically, where it was in his hands. And when I saw that, I'm like, this is a problem. Even if Mahomes makes a mistake, well, you can't. Allen's throwing in a double coverage every throw. And I have a problem believing the hype when we see you in that pressure cooker, and it's not the first time you've been in the pressure cooker, and that's the reaction. Now, we've also seen throughout, like, it's kind of his thing. I get it. Usually when you set up a run for him or two and he gets hit properly, he kind of feels more in the game. Like, I get how Josh Allen operates. We all do. That start worried me, man. And on top of that, that's the healthiest that offense has been arguably all season. They've been missing a guy left and right the entire year, whether it's one of the tight ends or it's Shakir or whoever. He had everybody. And I just didn't like the composure for most of the game. And if we're going to have the honest discussion of where this goes, this guy has not won an MVP. This guy has not been to a Super Bowl. This guy has not done some major stuff. You put Jalen Hurts' resume next to his right now, I'll tell you which one I'll take.
I will say this, though. If Josh Allen was in the NFC on that Eagles team, then I think it's like we're talking about them and the Chiefs every year being like, who's the greater dynasty? Like, I really believe that. Like, Hurts is a good quarterback, but Allen is, to me, you know, I think I saw a tweet from Nick Wright where he was like, hey, Mahomes has beat all these guys. Like, he's beat Lamar in the playoffs. He's beat Josh Allen four times in the playoffs. He's beaten Joe Burrow in the playoffs, even though Burrow has also beaten him. But he's like, yo, this isn't a big four. This is one and then the other three. And that is the way that I see it, is Allen is in that three. I will say this, though, to your point, like, I am not as much on the, like, Allen killed them in this game, simply because, like, I look at the full body of work, like Chiefs versus Bills, and to me, I see like 9 touchdowns and a turnover for like the Bills over the stretch. And it's like the same for the Chiefs. I think they have 9 touchdowns and maybe 1 or 2 turnovers. And that Mahomes is just better than him. Like, I don't think that there's like this crazy amount of shame in the idea of like arguably the greatest football player that we've ever seen. And I would say, like, he's not the greatest of all time because that's a cumulative resume thing. But in terms of, like, the greatest quarterback I've ever seen in one singular moment, like, damn, it's hard not to think this is the guy, that he's the one that keeps beating you. To me, it's, like, more about, like, I want to see some different structure stuff in place. Like, I think the play calling stuff absolutely sucked. I think that Sean McDermott giving up, you know, 30 plus points every single time he faces these Chiefs team when he is a defensive coach and they're like the most limited they've ever been. And this kind of felt like the shot. That's kind of supposed to be something. But where I'm with you on the Allen criticism is that he gets treated different than the other guys. Like, Lamar absolutely gets raked over the coals when it comes to him playing poorly. And some of it, I think, is because he's been more turnover prone than Allen has, like, in recent vintages. But, like, with Lamar, it's basically like, this guy's a choker. He can't get things done. He's the James Harden of the NFL. And with Josh Allen, it's always like, hey, it's super sympathetic, despite the fact that, yeah, man, he has now had multiple opportunities to go down the field and beat this Chiefs team by himself. And this time specifically, like, guy didn't do it. Like, this was the spot that it was supposed to be a who gets the ball last game. He got the ball last. He didn't come through. And I haven't really seen anybody other than you say something about it.
I just think it's like, I agree with all that. But I'll go back to Hurts just for a second, though. Hurts, in his playoff career, Jalen Hurts is a more accurate thrower than Josh Allen, and he's turned it over less. But still, it's Josh Allen getting the pass. Lamar Jackson, a couple weeks ago in Buffalo, his last two throws of the game, essentially, that mattered, both should have resulted in scores.
Yeah.
Josh Allen can't say that from Sunday. I don't think it's fair to just say, well, Mahomes is that good. Because you're right, Lamar doesn't get that. And guess what? Jalen Hurts is going to get that in a couple Sundays if it plays out that way. I think we need to start looking at this a little differently. Josh Allen isn't the MVP of this season, let alone, like, a top two quarterback in the league. Like, he's not. And everything has to get looked at. Everything has to come into play here. Jim Kelly went to four straight Super Bowls, man. I know what the story of that era was, but that's crazy. That's insane. That's a team that knew who they were up until a specific moment. But at least they got there. And you could tell, and listen, the Mahomes factor is huge.
Yeah.
He's got a Hall of Fame tight end. He's got a brilliant head coach. That defense is disgusting. I get it. But don't tell me, with 3.5 minutes on the clock, if that's the best quarterback in football, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that. And don't not give the ball to James Cook on top of it.
Yeah, that was tough.
It's not a hit problem. That's a whole nother discussion. I just don't like the pass that he got, and it bothered me, and it led to my tweet yesterday.
Yeah.
We need to be even with this stuff.
Yeah. I agree
and
with
we're
that.
We're not with Josh Allen, and it pisses me off a little bit.
I agree with that. Hold on, Sid. We're going to try to reconnect your phone line because it's getting a little wonky there. So we're going to call you back. Hold on. The boys are going to grab you here. But I agree with what is being said here in the regards of Allen doesn't get the same level of criticism. And I do think that part of that is if I was a Bills fan, I'd be the same way. It's kind of like the Raptors, where sometimes you're afraid to criticize your guy, especially in markets where you feel like, God, the worst thing ever would be to lose him. And like, man, you've seen like the JP Lossmans of the world. You've never won you don't win Super Bowls. It is what it is. I think Allen is amazing. I do think that he is the third best quarterback in all of football, which is like, is that slight? No, that's amazing if you got the third best QB. But the thing for me is that they've got to be able to capitalize every single other place in order to shore up those things. Like, hey, if Josh Allen does look nervous at the very beginning of a football game, who are going to be the people that settle him down? Hey, if Josh Allen is going to need to make plays down the field, can you have someone that's more reliable than a missed first round pick? And so to me, the real conversation the Bills need to be having, and the one that has to stop being kind of self-satisfactory and patting themselves on the back, is like, well, Sean McDermott's a good coach and we do this whole thing every year. Like, he's built a culture, he's built a thing. At some point, I want to see something different around Josh Allen. Like, it's the same thing that we've said about the Leafs. Like, I think they've gotten two breaks at it because this is now their third head coach. But it was supposedly the moment where it was Sheldon Keefe was, hey, let's get fresh eyes on this thing. Let's see if other players can get maximized in different ways. And at this point, I just don't know why they're clinging to this general manager. I don't know why they're clinging to this head coach. And another year of this, if it ends up blown, is, I think, going to look like a bit of a missed opportunity here. So that's where I'm at. Hey, Sid, we got you back?
Sorry, brother. You got me? I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. We got you. All right. Let's move on to the next thing. So, you know, you got like some ornery tweets going on lately, eh? Like, you're taking shots. I love
super,
it. I love
super
it.
Ornery, ultra ornery.
Well, the thing is, too, is, like, I find that a lot of people, like, with social media is boring to me when it's purely just, like, the safest groupthink stuff ever. Like, that's why I checked out on the Rantanen trade stuff immediately, where I was like, oh, cool, everybody in hockey has the exact same opinion that the team that's won a Stanley Cup and has Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and has Joe Sakic running things is just a bunch of idiots that are bumbling around and have no thought on this. Oh, they just found out Rantanen was willing to take a big haircut. Like, okay, yeah, no, that's the reality of the situation. Fine, we're doing it that way. But I vehemently disagree with you about your Austin Matthews take. It looked worse for me because Matthews got, like, completely ghosted the following night against a raucous crowd. I think only had a shot. Got completely shut down in Toronto's second arena, if not their primary arena. But you don't like that the captain, the team talked about the fans, and I want to dig in on this. Like, why? Why do you have an issue with it?
I think they're off limits.
Why?
I think they're off limits because they have not gotten their money's worth. That's why they're off limits. By the way, quickly to the Rantanen trade.
Yeah.
The one part of Twitter I did love was the Chicago Blackhawks don't know how to work the cap properly.
Yeah,
I was a big fan of that.
Yeah,
big fan.
I think it actually should, like, that's a fair question to ask after this. Like, the criticisms that went their way, I was like, yeah, that's fine. I don't think they know what they're doing.
They passed around edibles during board meetings over there?
Yeah.
Holy cow!
It's like.
Sorry, back to the league.
I think they just let's make the league more fun, guys. that's the only way that could be rationalized, what they did.
We're the only way this trade can happen?
Yeah.
Guys, least a fourth.
Yeah.
At least a fourth round.
Yeah. They're like, okay, sure, guys, get out of here. Thanks, Chicago. And they're like, we did it. Like, I just don't understand. I could picture them, too, like, scrolling social media, kind of like Kendall Roy, where he's, like, sitting in the back of, bad tweet, where it's all the people hating him. Like, look how much the internet hates me. That's basically Kyle Davidson whenever he does anything. But anyway, yeah, back to
Kyle Davidson as Kendall Roy is one of my favorite bunkers.
Yeah, that's it. It's a bad tweet. And then him pretending like he doesn't care, but he really cares deeply about the way that the people see him. Yeah, that's what I thought of in that moment. But, yeah, so they're not getting their money's worth fair, okay?
They're not getting their money's worth. And now, listen,
have you seen the prices? I don't know how you do get your money's worth. Like that worth. Well, it's like they got to have like fireworks inside, you know, like giveaways. I don't know how they could possibly justify that. Like it's $100 for a beer.
But also the notion, like the narrative in this town that it's all like the richest people and no family folk or no like guys working regular jobs in that lower bowl is inaccurate.
Mm.
I don't think it's totally accurate.
Mm.
I think there are fans who pay a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be a part of it.
Yep.
And when you have a fight on a Wednesday night in Toronto, well, 80% of the fan base has checked out on the regular season already. And I get it. But that's just the way it's gone on around here. When you have a fight a minute something into a hockey game, when people are still at concessions waiting for that $100 beer, I don't know what you want with this. Now, Matthews is sticking up for his guy, and I understand that. That fight was insane, and I have nothing but respect for Ryan Reeves. But the fact that that building didn't react in any way tells you maybe also something about what they think of fighting in general.
No.
And what they think, then why did they react that way?
I think it has more to do with what you said about like the Wednesday night thing. Like, you know, it's, man, you see every hockey, like you go to a junior hockey game, you see fights, it's like the crowd gets out of their seats. It's like, I'm on the Don Cherry train with this where it's like, I think it's the Brian Burke. I can't remember who has that one, but it's like, there's a few things in a hockey game that get you out of your seat and one of them's a fight and I'm fully there with it. Like, there's definitely a vocal minority of people that think fighting is like the worst thing to ever happen in the history of sports. But I think the vast majority of people like that go to a hockey game, they see a fight, they're like, yeah, they're pretty stoked on that.
But the argument for the fight has been, like, over the last 15 years, it energizes the bench and it gets the crowd going. Maybe Toronto's unique.
Yeah.
Didn't get the crowd going.
Yeah.
And God bless them, they had a good first period. And Nylander got his three breakaways And however that played out, they lost 5-1. So someone has to explain to me how the arithmetic on that works for a fight energizing the bench and the arena.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying Ryan Reeves shouldn't. That's what Ryan Reeves does. He has to do. That's why he's here. And I like that Olivier helped him out. And that's what it felt like it was. It was bizarre in a lot of ways.
No, it was. It was another fighter giving the nod to a guy and saying, like, hey, I'll give you one because I know you would give me that too. Like, that was the code.
But and if those two things don't happen after a fight in a hockey arena at that level, what is the purpose of it happening?
No, but this is what I would say. This is the counter, though. Is like that. This is the thing, Sid. That arena's dead quiet all the time. Like, it's not just a because of this fight thing. Like, that,
the
I think,
reason
is
it's dead quiet.
No, but
the
that's,
reason it's dead quiet. There's no scrums, JD.
No, but
there's no hits.
No,
there's
that,
no power play goal.
Partially,
that's why the building is that quiet.
No, partially. The building has a bad atmosphere, Sid. Like, you know, I know you know this in terms of like going to other arenas. Like, you go to any other Canadian arena and it is nothing like Toronto's. Like, it's just a fact. Like, you go to a game in the Bell Center and it's like you feel like the weight of history in the building. You go to a game in Vancouver and it's like the people are locked in. That's the closest one that I've been to that is like Toronto, and it's nothing close to Toronto. You go to games. I've been to every single arena in Canada outside of Winnipeg. That's the only place I haven't seen a game. I've been to many Toronto games. That lower bowl is like nothing that you will ever see. It is sanitized. It is corporate. It is quiet. It is dead. You try to get a Go Leafs Go chant going and you feel like an absolute idiot. And it's not a Toronto issue because I go to Blue Jays games as well. And you know what happens at Blue Jays games? People get rowdy and they get loud and they're in the 100s. And it's like a far more diverse crowd in terms of, like, I think, income and just
really? Well, hold on, JD. Yeah. Hold on a second. I see the wave in a 4-3 baseball game.
But that's
You're telling
what I'm
me
saying.
Everyone's it's always a, engaged at Rogers Center?
Yeah, that's
seriously?
A, no, I'm not saying engaged necessarily in like the play that they're like sitting there like studiously going over the baseball. They're not like Geddy Lee taking score of the game, but I'm saying they're into it. They're loud. They cheer. Like, the wave is a way for, it's not my way, but it's a way for people to participate in rooting on their team. And like that arena stinks for fandom. It just does.
I know I'm on an island on this.
Yeah, you
and
are.
I know.
Go to Raptors
know,
game, like, totally different. Raptors game is raucous, baby. Loud. Energy.
Raptors games are great.
Yeah.
But this Leaf fan base, to get excited about regular season hockey games after the last 9 years, you are really stretching, man.
But why would a
You're
Blue Jays
really
fan base
stretching.
Get excited? They've had nothing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just saying a fight's not going to do it.
Yeah.
A fight's not going to do it. A scrum will do it. Some level of aggression that isn't just let's fight 95 or 65 seconds into the game will get that crowd into it. We've seen that a bunch over time. It doesn't happen much anymore because that's the way they built the team. But that crowd will react to certain things, just not that. And if Austin Matthews doesn't understand that, I don't know what to tell him. Like that. I listen, man, that Gilmore team in the 90s, and I don't want to be old guy going back in time.
Yeah.
They played a certain way. And Maple Leaf Gardens reacted every time there was something worth getting up for. This team has sanitized the product so badly with strictly skill, and that skill's not even there. No one's doing anything in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that's much – like, listen, Scotiabank Arena is not Montreal on a Saturday night. I understand that. But to completely dismiss their potential as a crowd is letting that team and executive group off the damn hook.
I agree with that.
Sorry.
I agree with that. But here's the thing. I don't want to conflate two different things because these are separate issues where I'm saying I think that for the fans to not have been loud after that fight is explainable. And like you mentioned, that there are times where I want the players to take more onus on themselves than start to be looking into the crowd. But I don't think that Matthews is saying that because it's in a vacuum, that it's like this is a one-off situation. I think this is the captain of the team addressing the fact that they have a very quiet arena in comparison to their other league counterparts, that when they go to Ottawa, it's hard for them not to notice that they're getting raucous Go Leaf Go chants in a different barn than their, and when they're in their own, it's an extremely difficult thing to get. And so is like the approach of the moment the right spot? No, not necessarily. But from a standpoint of, is the captain of the team allowed to talk about the fans? I'm saying yes. I think that if we, the media, can talk about the players, if we, the media, can talk about the fans, I roast the fans all the time. I give them credit for certain things. Like, you know, I rip certain fan bases. it would be crazy of me to say, like, the other side of it being like, okay, well, the player can't say something about the way that the fans are necessarily treating him. So that's what I'm kind of trying to parse here is, like, are you saying he can never do it? Like, they're totally off limits every single time, or that they were just off limits after a loss?
I'm saying you got to pick your spot.
Yeah, okay.
I'm saying you got to pick your spot.
Different, though. That's different.
And I'm saying, and listen, I by the end of the Tavares captaincy tenure, I was as annoyed as anyone
yeah.
at how sanitary that was.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. So in a lot of in certain ways, I can't rip Matthews if I felt that way. I get it. But there was a visual on Twitter the other day of Matthew Barzal,
yeah.
the Islanders. yeah. You know the shot I'm talking about.
Yeah,
The cameras, for people who didn't notice or see this clip, he was looking around their arena. And it's pretty, you know, lip reading is a dangerous thing. But it was fairly obvious he was turning to his teammate next to him on the bench saying, there's nobody here. It's pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Support is not the same in every city.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. If that building that's down at Bay Street is full, regardless of what happens,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give him some grace.
Fair. Fair point.
I'm going to give him some grace. And I don't think this group right now needs to be looking at that. Again, Matthew said it once he moved on, so yeah. I won't stay on it long either. But the priority of how the team plays has to change a little bit if they want that crowd really into it. Because I've seen it in the playoffs at times. I might tweet this out soon because I remember a time where Mitch Marner ended a playoff game against the Caps with like three straight block shots, and the place went nuts.
Yeah.
The place went. Remember back then? Remember the good old days, JD?
Yeah.
Back then, it was a different time. I understand that. The playoffs were new
when
again.
Everybody
Young
liked
team,
them.
Everyone liked them.
Yeah.
That place can get as large as any place in the league, but you cannot keep feeding them this sterile stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I have a lot of respect for Ryan Reeves, but I draw a hard line
yeah.
on a building that is full, regardless of what you do, regardless of how you play, regardless of who you beat in the postseason or who you don't beat in the postseason. And I that is a real sore spot for me, considering how entitled this organization seems to be. I'm going to draw the line somewhere, and for me, that was it. I understand people don't agree. I get it. That's where I draw the line.
So there's two things, though, to this for me, like in what you're touching on. One is I don't think anyone questions the undying support of, like, Leafs Nation as a whole, right? There's a reason why that sucker's full every single night. I think there's a frustration on from fan standpoint that it doesn't end up being more advantageous to the group. And I view it as a very chicken and egg thing as well. Like, I don't think it's, like, a very binary, like, the fans are owed to just root these guys on and be loud every single night when they're giving you some of the product that you're talking about, right? Like, that's why I'm pro booing. Like, I like booing. I like when fans hold teams accountable yeah. when they play poorly. Like, I say fan however you want to fan. I don't think you have to boo, but I think if you feel so compelled, you boo your little heart out. You know what I'm saying? Is that the fan base feels like, man, we could be getting more and have a real home ice advantage if it was a crowd that was reflective of more of what this fan base is actually like. And this has been a growing problem for quite some time. And so I would say, if I was Austin Matthews, if you're going to go out there and put it out as, hey, it's too quiet in here, then kind of put your money where your mouth is and go see if you can try to help be part of the solution in terms of getting it better in there. And I mean that with your play on the ice and also with being able to have the ear of every single suit within the organization is going to take a meeting with Austin Matthews and have him be able to discuss this. So it's like, you want to be a captain? This is a problem to you? Fine, for sure, do it. The part that I really don't like that you touched on with this and that I do think is systemic and that I'm sorry to overreact to it to a certain degree is that this group, one of their biggest things has been a big time like us, like them versus us mentality. And they will apply that to anyone. And so it's kind of an innocuous, hey, it's a little quiet after a fight situation. But instead of looking internally and saying, hey, we just lost this hockey game, you know, like we lost, we got beat by a better opponent. By a worse opponent. And yes, they outplayed them. But the thought process isn't like just immediate, like full accountability. It's again a situation where it's like a leadership core member mentioned someone else being a problem that is outside of their control. And that kind of stuff is where I go, wish this wasn't the thing, you know?
No.
Like, there's too many examples of that where it's like, oh, it's the media making the big deal. Oh, it's the fans that aren't loud enough. Oh, it's the other team that played us. Oh, it's the bounces we didn't get. Oh, it was the officiate. It's like, yeah, at some point, I'd like to see it. I've talked about this ad nauseum. Again, it's like the accountability culture. That, to me, there's a little bit of that there. So I simultaneously like that he said something about a real issue to me about the arena, but also that it's like, yeah, sometimes the group messenger, the cumulative, I would say, fan trauma people have had when it comes to those guys in that regard, like that matters there too.
It does. But listen, sometimes that us against the world thing works. Like, I think some of that's going on with the Eagles right now.
Yeah, but that works for like a playoff run where you're like, nobody believed in us and you're kind of lying. Yeah. But then you're like still celebrating your fan. But I actually heard a take on this the other day that was so good. I loved it to death. It was like, I think it was Connor Orr of SI. He was like, the whole nobody believes in us thing to like the fans and the media is like insulting to all the people that buy all the tickets and like support you undyingly. Like, do it for them. Don't do it for like the haters. Do it for all the people that are like, you're our everything. No, we believe in you. I'm like, well, yeah, why doesn't that get me?
But if it brings you strength, like some type of rebel force.
Sure, but I'm just like, saying it's always that way where it's like our own fans were against us. Like Team Canada too. It's like, yeah, okay, there's some people that are mad that you're losing, but there's a far greater group of people that are like, go team, even though the Leafs have not won since 67. You guys have been a horrifically disappointing core. And then they're like, we believe in you. And then the players are like, dang, nobody believed. It's just like, God, I'd like for it to be a balance. It's always nobody believes in us. It's never for the people that believe in us. That's all. I just thought it was an astute point. I liked it.
We live in a world where the criticism gets to the point where Patrick Mahomes with a straight face can tweet out a 70 TM margin.
Yeah.
Like that's wild.
Yeah.
That is quite a place to be. Yeah. But again, you ask any Leaf fan in the city.
Yeah.
If the team used criticism from you as fuel and got to a cup final, would the fan care?
No. That's not. Yeah.
I don't think they would.
No.
That's not happening though.
Yeah.
That's happening. It's still a team with severe depth issues, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been doubting you. Like, we've been publicly doubting you for a long time. Use it. Like, use it. Do it.
Use it.
Everybody.
Use it,
hey,
yes.
I'd like to send this to the Maple Leafs. Nobody believes in you. Nobody believes in you. You're actually the nobody believes in us team. Prove people wrong. Like, you have that opportunity to be the first nobody believed in us team, and it's true.
So that's kind of – but I have to say – in terms of sports talk,
yeah,
it's a great. Thank you, Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Thank you, Austin Matthews, for that. And again, I do appreciate he's not Tavarsing this.
Yeah.
I do. I just I get a visceral reaction, though, when I hear that fan base criticized.
I get it.
But I understand your point. By the way, I'll wrap. I feel like I've got a lot. Let me wrap it up this way. We are 501 days away, JD, from Canada and England at BMO Field to kick off the 2026 World Cup or whoever they draw. We're 501 days away.
Wait, the Canada game's going to be in Toronto?
Oh, yeah, we got it. The kickoff game's in Toronto.
I thought that all the... that's
the rest of them were basically in Vancouver, but we got the big one off the front. Yeah.
I got to tell you, so that excites me to no end, but also after seeing all the, like, I follow an account called Soccer Fights on Twitter, and
you told me about this before.
Yeah, and yes. I got to tell you, I have a certain cafe that is right around BMO that I go to before every single either TFC or Argos game that I go to. And I would just like to say to them, please board up the shop and don't let anybody in. Like, don't just board it up. Save it so that we can have something to come back to. But after the way the English fans comported themselves, like all the video of English soccer fans, the fact that it's England, Canada for game one, I don't think I'll be there. I just think, you know, maybe you go with me with your security detail, possibly, but chairs getting thrown and bottles. To me, I'm like, my excitement for the World Cup in this city is tempered by the violence that comes with it. I can't deny that. Like seeing the people get trampled at Copa.
I'm just positive. Listen, it's not like BMO's some 80,000 seater. Like, you know what I mean?
Fair.
It's going to be, I've been at games with English fans. Like it is, they let you know they're there.
Yeah.
They let you know they're there. But like, I have faith. I'll be positive here.
Yeah.
I have faith in FIFA's security, not the city of Toronto. No.
Yeah, I was going to say,
it's not Copa America security, it's FIFA security.
All right.
I have faith in that. I think you're going to be fine, Jimmy.
Yeah, okay, good. I was going to say, bring in the guys from, like, Qatar. The dudes.
It'll be like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, bring it in where it's like you catch eyes with the wrong guy and you're like, oh, my God. All right, I'll behave. I want those kind of guys at the game, like, and in the surrounding area and in the surrounding bars. Anyways, I can't wait for it. Yeah, that is, oh, that is going to be spectacular. I didn't realize, though, like, I missed that entirely, that we were getting one of the games. I thought from
We kind of got hosed on the rest of the schedule, because I think if Canada even are in the round, if they win their group and are in round of 32, that game's also in Vancouver.
Yeah.
But the first one, they were like, you guys can have, and it's like the second day of the tournament. It's going to be wild. Like, I got shivers. Just
are you going to go?
I will try and find my way in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will try and find my way in. Yes.
Hey, do me a favor. Try to find my way in too.
I will try. I will help out the finding of the ways in of as many people as I can.
Yeah. Yes. I know you have like brothers and, you know, like people that you're probably going to prioritize.
My priority list?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I might not be in that list, but you know, if one of them is like too afraid, kind of like me, then, you know, I'll suck it up. I'll suck it up.
I'll move you up in the queue.
Yeah. Put me on the queue. Hey, Sid, thanks as always for making time, brother. This is fun.
See you,
dude. Sid Sixero, BT. All right. Let's take a quick break before we do that. Let's try this again, because apparently people are misspelling it. I don't know if it's a bit that you guys are doing in the comments, but if it is a bit, it's funny. If it's not, it's discouraging. All right. Morgan Wallen has announced his I'm the Problem tour with stops in Toronto on September 4th and 5th. To celebrate, we're giving you a chance to beat the box office and win a pair of tickets to the show at the Rogers Centre on September 4th. To enter, all you have to do is tune in to the J.D. Bunkus podcast, listen for the code word, then text the code word 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Today's code word is tour. 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 I'm not spelling it out. It's related to music. Tour. We will have another code word tomorrow. If you don't win with us, today is your last day to register for the artist presale at signup.ticketmaster.com/Morgan Wallen. Quick break, what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Can we say your news?
Yeah. You can go off.
So Mike's leaving the show, which sucks. He couldn't take it. He couldn't nag it. He bet that you're gonna be a horse farmer.
That's the plan.
That's good.
What do I know about horses?
Yeah,
pretty much nothing.
Yeah, here's the thing. I would never leave my horse with you. Like,
oh, okay.
I just can't imagine the person that like so. You have to hide yourself entirely from, like, all the forward-facing aspects of this, right? Like, does your wife have, like, a little bit of a country look to her? Like, could she throw on, like, a full jean jacket and, like, pull it off? Because there's nothing for you. Like, there's no look that you can do.
You don't think I can pull off overalls?
No, I don't. I think that, at best, if I showed up, I'd be like, oh, does that guy scoop the poop from the...
Like, oh, I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah, like, he's just the guy that cleans up after the horses and, like, looks at them and is like, you're so nice, horses. Sometimes I wish I was a horse. Like, you got that weird guy energy around the barn, but not, like, the main man running the operation energy. You would admit that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I want to see, if I show up to anywhere where horses are involved, I want to see Yellowstone stand-in kind of looking guys that are around it going, don't worry, we're going to take care of your horse. And I'll be like, yep, I believe you. You? I'm like,
yeah, the only farm experience horse to I live. Have is Jesus.
Yeah, that's not what you want. that's not the only farming experience you want. Yeah, show's going to miss you. But it also, it's like you tell us, like, hey, you're going to be leaving the show, and then Armin fakes sick because he's hungover and all of the same
he's
day.
He's not hungover.
He's posted... So let me ask, this is a good one for the audience. If you post a picture of you going out drinking the night before, can you call in sick to work? And I say no. I say it doesn't matter what you have. You got to get in. You post a picture of you with booze and you are at work the next day, period. You don't, and you'll never, I don't, like, he could have... I don't know, influenza, like, it doesn't matter. He could have the plague. It's like, you got to come in.
I agree with you, but there's context behind that.
What's the context?
Armin will photo dump on his stories of, like, his whole week or his weekend.
Yeah, but you can't even do that anyway. Like, that's honestly, you know what that is? It's like, you're basically picking a thing. Either you're a faker liar who stayed home hungover from work, or you're dumb as a rock and you can't be trusted with anything. It's like, which of the two options is best?
Why is he dumb as a rock?
Because of the optics of doing the photo dump and then calling in sick to work.
Optically, it was a bad look.
Yeah, it's a horrible look. It's a horrible look. That's crazy stuff.
But I do have to defend him. I don't think he's hungover.
Can I say why it's so indefensible?
Go on.
Because I did it, and I got in big trouble. Like, I want to say, like, 2016, I did that exact move where a boss pulled me aside and was like, hey, remember when you called in sick yesterday? I was like, yeah. He's like, why was it that you were at the Jays game? And I was like, fair play.
Good point.
But mine was even dumber, actually. Mine was the day of. Like, I called in sick and then posted something, I think. Oh. I don't know if I posted or someone posted and I was in their post. But either way, like, you have to get that out there if you're playing hooky. Like, yo, don't add me in any stories. Don't put me, like, make sure I'm not part of a social media post. Because that, I think that's a fair thing to say in 2025, right? Because it's like easy to do that. You just get a snap to pick of, and you're not even sure you're in it, and it's on somebody's story. You can say ahead of time, yo, I got to be here on the low.
On the low?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm 100% with you.
Yeah.
I
so
agree
again,
with you.
It's an unfortunate day because you're leaving the show and Armin is fired. So,
hey, we got intern Brandon Brown here, though.
Yeah, we do. All right. Do we have time? Yeah. What do we miss? Give me one topic.
One topic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the Sens. We were talking a little bit about the Sens yesterday.
Yeah.
So Sens executives forced to release a comment after fans on social media reacted to an announcement. The team will be playing two preseason games in Quebec City. The new owner implied it could lead to regular season games being played there. And the team released photo of mascot Sparty in a split Sens Nordiques jersey.
Yeah. Okay. So I understand the market sensitivity, right? You had an old owner that was like,
oh, all-time high even sensitive be here. Right now.
Right? You know, we might not even be here. And Leafs fans just came in your building and took it over as they always do. And like I said, your fan base hasn't grown by a person in 20 years, which is tough. But this one's kind of like, you're kind of being a little too insecure with this. Like, I think the owner said as much. He said, if they play games in Sweden, they can play games in Quebec City. Like, nobody gets their, you know, being a bonnet over games going over to Sweden. We celebrate it. And I do think Quebec City is owed some NHL games. Like, and if the Sens are smart, like, they've got a Francophone fan base being close to, like, Orleans, and people don't want to cheer for Montreal. Like, I just think that's smart business. So I don't really hate it, but I understand why Sens fans are crying about it. But, like, hey, they're not going to move the team from Ottawa to Quebec City, so don't worry about it. Anyways, we'll see you tomorrow. We got Ernie Clement tomorrow. We'll see you then.